Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Hawk and Fisher. Narrated by Terence Aselford, with performances by Danny Gavigan, Ren Casey, Yasmin Toison, David Coyne, Andy Clements, Michael Glenn, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, Tim Getman, James Konacek, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Christopher Sheeran, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, M.B. Van Dorn, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Joseph Thornhill, Thomas Keegan, Ken Jackson, and Mort Shelby. Hawk and Fisher, Book 6, The Bones of Haven. Haven is an old city, but still growing, with new houses built on the bones of the old. But some parts of Haven are older than others, and have never been properly put to rest. Down below the surface of the city, the remains of older structures stir uneasily in their sleep, and dream dark thoughts of the way things used to be. There are new buildings all over Haven, and some of them stand on unquiet graves. Rain came to Haven with the spring, and a sharp gusting wind blew it in off the sea. The rain hammered down with mindless ferocity, bouncing back from the cobbles and running down the gutters in raging torrents. Water dripped from every surface, gushed out of drain pipes, and flew in graceful arcs from carved gargoyle mouths on the smarter buildings. It had been raining on and off for weeks, despite everything the city weather wizards could do. Everyone felt heartily sick of it. The rain forced itself past slates and tiles and gurgled down chimneys, making fires sputter and smoke. Anyone venturing out into the streets was soaked in an instant. Even inside, the air seemed saturated with moisture. People gritted their teeth and learned to ignore damp clothing and the constant drumming of rain on the roof. It was the rainy season, and the city endured it as the city endured so many other afflictions, with stubborn defiance and aimless, sullen anger. Yet things were not as gloomy in the port city of Haven as they might have been. The rain-soaked streets stood bedecked with flags, bunting, and decorations. Their bright and gaudy colors blazed through the grayness of the day. Two kings had come to Haven, so the city put on an attractive face and enjoyed itself as best it could. It would take more than a little rain to dampen Haven's spirits when it had an excuse to celebrate. Officials declared a public holiday for most jobs on the grounds that the eager citizens would have taken one anyway. People held street parties between the downpours and boosted the takings at all the inns and taverns. Tarpaulins sprouted in the streets wherever possible to ward off the rain, and beneath them could be found street fairs and conjurers, play actors, and all manner of entertainments. Of course, not everyone got to take the day off. The city guard still went about its business, enforcing the law and protecting the good citizens from pickpockets and villains and outrages, and most important of all, from each other. Haven was a harsh, cruel city, swarming with predators, even during a time of supposedly universal celebration. So Hawk and Fisher, husband and wife, and captains in the city guard, made their way through the dismal gray streets of the north side and wished they were somewhere else. Anywhere else. They huddled inside their thick black cloaks and pulled the hoods well forward to keep the rain out of their faces. Hawk was tall, dark, and no longer handsome. He wore a black silk patch over his right eye, and a series of old scars ran down the right side of his face, giving him a cold, sinister look. Huddled inside his soaking wet black cloak, he looked like a rather bedraggled raven that had known better days. It had to be said that even when seen at his best, he didn't look like much. He was lean and wiry rather than muscular, and was beginning to build a stomach. He wore his dark hair at shoulder length, swept roughly back from his forehead and tied at the nape of his neck with a silver clasp. He'd only just entered his 30s, but already there were streaks of gray in his hair. It would have been easy to dismiss him as just another bravo, perhaps already past his prime, but there was a dangerous alertness in the way he carried himself, and the cold gaze of his single eye was disturbingly direct. He carried a short-handled axe on his right hip instead of a sword. He was very good with an axe. He'd had lots of practice. Isabel Fisher walked at his side, unconsciously echoing his pace and stance with the naturalness of long companionship. She was tall, easily 6 feet in height, and her long blonde hair fell to her waist in a single thick plait, weighted at the tip with a polished steel ball. She was in her late 20s, and handsome rather than beautiful, with a raw-boned harshness to her face that contrasted strongly with her deep blue eyes and generous mouth. Some time ago, something had scoured all the human weaknesses out of her, and it showed. Even wrapped in her thick cloak against the driving rain, she moved with a determined, aggressive grace, and her right hand never strayed far from the sword on her hip. People gave them plenty of room as they approached, and were careful to look away rather than risk catching the guard's eyes. None of them wanted to be noticed. It wasn't healthy. Hawk and Fisher were feared and respected as two of the toughest and most honest guards in Haven, and everyone in the North Side had something to hide. It was that kind of area. Hawk glared balefully about him as he and Fisher strode along. He stamped his boots unnecessarily hard on the water-slick cobbles.
Oh, cheer up, Hawk. Another month or so of utter misery, and the rainy season will be over. Then you can start looking forward to the utter misery of the boiling hot summer. Always something to look forward to in Haven.
I hate it when you're this cheerful. It's not natural.
Me or the rain?
Both.
Hawk stepped carefully over a tangled mass of bunting that had fallen from a nearby building.
I can't believe people are still going ahead with celebrations in this downpour.
Any excuse for a holiday? Besides, they can hardly postpone it. The Kings will only be here 2 more days. Then, it'll all be over. And we can get back to what passes for normal here in the North Side.
Hawk's job was hard enough without extra complications. Haven earned and maintained a sterling reputation as the most corrupt and crime-ridden city in the Low Kingdoms, and the North Side was its dark and rotten heart. No crime was too vile or too vicious to be overlooked. If one could make any kind of profit out of it, you could be sure someone was doing it somewhere, and double-crossing his partner at the same time like as not. Physical violence was commonplace, along with rape and murder and protection rackets. Conspiracies blossomed in the shadows, talking treason in lowered voices behind locked doors and shuttered windows. Throughout Haven, the city guard stretched thin to the breaking point and beyond, yet somehow they managed to keep a leaky lid on things most of the time. Usually by being even harsher and more violent than the people they fought, when they weren't taking sweeteners to look the other way, of course. All of which made it increasingly difficult for anyone to figure out why the parliaments of both the Low Kingdoms and Outremer insisted their respective kings meet in Haven to sign the new peace treaty between the two countries. True, the peace talks that led to the treaty took place in Haven, but only after the guard protected the negotiators from treacherous assault by mercenaries and terrorists. A great many people in both countries had vested interests in seeing the peace talks fail, and they showed no hesitation in turning Haven into their own private battleground. Hawk and Fisher managed to smash the worst conspiracy and preserve the talks, but just barely, and everyone knew it. Everyone except the two parliaments, apparently. They set their minds on Haven and weren't going to be talked out of it, probably because they simply couldn't believe what their advisors continued to tell them about the city. Upon learning of the singular honor bestowed on their fair city, Haven's city councilors nearly suffered a collective coronary, and then began issuing orders in a white-hot panic. No one recalled ever before seeing them do so much so quickly. One of their first edicts involved strict instructions to the guard to get all the villains off the streets as quickly as possible and throw the lot of them in jail, for any or no reason. They'd worry about trials and sentences later, if at all. For the moment, all that mattered was rounding up as many villains as possible and keeping them safely out of the way until the kings left Haven. The prison governor came closer to apoplexy than a coronary and demanded hysterically where he was supposed to put all these extra bodies in his already overcrowded prison. That, he was curtly informed, was his problem. So the guards went out into the streets all over the city, backed up by as many men-at-arms and militia as the council could put together, and started picking up villains and hauling them away. In some cases, where their lawyers objected strongly, the guards took them in as well. Word soon got around, and those miscreants who managed to avoid the sweeps decided it would be wisest to keep their heads down for a while and quietly disappeared. The crime rate plummeted overnight. which is not to say the city streets suddenly became peaceful and law-abiding. This was Haven, after all. But the usual petty crimes and everyday violence could be more or less controlled by the guard and kept well away from the kings and their retinues, which was all that mattered as far as the council was concerned. No one wanted to think what the city would be like after the kings left and most of the villains returned to the streets from prison due to lack of evidence. To be honest, few people in Haven thought that far ahead. In the meantime, Hawk and Fisher patrolled their usual beat in the north side and were pleasantly surprised at the change. There were stretches when no one tried to kill anyone else for hours on end.
What do you think about this peace treaty? Do you think it's going to work?
Maybe. As I understand it, the two sides have hammered out a deal that both of them hate, but both of them can live with, and that's the best anyone can hope for. Now that they've agreed on a definitive boundary line for the first time in centuries, it should put an end to the recent border clashes, at least. Too many good men died out there in the borderlands, defending a shaky line on a faded old map to satisfy some politician's pride.
I just wish they'd chosen somewhere else for their signing ceremony. Just by being here, the kings are a magnet for trouble. Every fanatic, assassin, and terrorist for miles around will see this as their big chance and head straight for Haven with blood in their eyes and steel in their hands.
Oh, come on. You've got to admit, the king's security is pretty impressive. They've got 4 heavy-duty sorcerers with them, a private army of men-at-arms, and a massive deputation of honor guards from the Brotherhood of Steel. I could conquer a minor country with a security force that size.
No security is ever perfect, you know that. All it needs is one fanatic with a knife and a martyr complex in the right place at the right time. And we could have 2 dead kings on our hands. And you can bet Haven would end up taking all the blame, not the security people. They should never have come here, Isabel. I've got a real bad feeling about this.
You have bad feelings about everything.
And I'm usually right.
Isabel looked at him knowingly.
You're just miffed because they wouldn't let any Haven guards into their security force.
Damn right I'm annoyed. We know the situation here. They don't. But I can't really blame them, much as I'd like to. Everyone knows the guard in this city is rife with corruption, and after our last case, no one trusts anyone anymore. After all, if even we can come under suspicion...
We proved our innocence and exposed the real traitor.
Doesn't make a blind bit of difference.
Hawk scowled and shook his head slowly.
I still can't believe how ready everyone was to accept we were guilty. After all we've done for this city. Anyway, from now on, there'll always be someone ready to point the finger and mutter about no smoke without fire.
Anyone points a finger at me, I'll cut it off. And make him eat it. Now stop worrying about the kings. They're not our responsibility.
They walked a while in silence, kicking occasionally at loose debris in the street. The rain seemed to be letting up a bit. Every now and again, someone up on a roof would throw something down at them, but Hawk and Fisher just ignored it. Thanks to the overhanging upper floors of the buildings, it was rare for anything to come close enough to do any harm. And there was no point in trying to chase after whoever was responsible. By the time the guards could get up to the roof, the culprits would be gone, and both sides knew it. They were in more danger from a suddenly emptied chamber pot from an upper window. You had to expect that kind of thing in the north side, even if you were the infamous Hawk and Fisher. Hawk scowled as he strode along, brooding over recent events. It wasn't that long ago that most of Haven had been convinced he'd gone berserk, killing anyone who got in the way of his own personal vendetta outside the law. It wasn't true, and eventually he proved it. But that wasn't the point. He knew he had a reputation for violence. He'd gone to great pains to establish it. It kept the villains and the hard cases off his back, and made the small fry too nervous to give him any trouble. Even so, the speed with which people believed he'd gone bad disturbed him greatly. For the first time, Hawk saw himself as others saw him, and he didn't like the picture.
We didn't used to be this hard. These days, every time I look at someone, I'm thinking about the best way to take them out before they can get to me, whether they're behaving aggressively or not. Whenever I talk to someone, part of me is listening for a lie or an evasion, and more, I tend to assume a suspect is bound to be guilty. Unless hard evidence proves them innocent.
In the north side, they usually are guilty.
That's not the point. I always said I never laid a finger on an honest man or killed anyone who didn't need killing. I'm not so sure of that anymore. I'm not infallible. I make mistakes. Only thing is, my mistakes could cost someone their life. When we first took on this job, I really thought we could do some good, make a difference, help protect the people who needed protection. But now everyone I meet gets weighed as a potential enemy, and I care more about nailing villains than I do about protecting their victims. We've changed, Isabel. The job has changed us. Maybe we should think about leaving Haven. I don't like what we've become.
Fisher looked at him anxiously.
We're only as hard as we need to be to get the job done. This city is full of human wolves, ready to tear us apart at the first sign of weakness. It's only our reputation for sudden death and destruction that keeps them at bay. Remember what it was like when we first started? We had to prove ourselves every day, fighting and killing every hard case with a sword and a grudge, just to earn the right to walk the streets in peace. Well, now they've learned to leave us alone. We can get things done. Look, we're a reflection of the people we're guarding. If they start acting civilized and playing by the rule book, so will I. Until then, we just do what we have to get the job done.
But that's the point, Isabel. Why do the job? What difference does it make? For every villain we put away, there are a dozen more we can't touch who are just waiting to take his place. We bust our asses every day and nothing ever changes. Except us.
Now, don't start that again. We have made a difference. Sure, things are bad now, but they were much worse before we came. And they'd be worse again if we left. You can't expect to change centuries of accumulated evil and despair in a few short years, Hawk. We do the best we can and protect the good people every chance we get. Anything above and beyond that is a bonus. You gotta be realistic, Hawk.
Yeah, maybe.
Hawk stared straight ahead of him, looking through the driving rain without seeing it.
I've lost my way, Isabel. I don't like what I am, what I'm doing, what I've become. This isn't what I meant to do with my life, but I don't know what else to do. Well, you're needed here. You're right about that. But some days I look in the mirror and I don't recognize my face at all. I hear people talking about things I've done, and it doesn't sound like me. Not the me I remember being before we came here. I've lost my way. And I don't know how to find it again.
Fisher scowled unhappily and decided she'd better change the subject.
I know what your problem is. You're just brooding because I've put you on another diet.
Hawk smiled in spite of himself.
Right. I must be getting old, Isabel. I never used to put on weight like this. Can't believe I've had to let my belt out another notch. When I was younger, I had so much energy, I used to burn off food as fast as I could eat it. These days, I only have to look at a dessert and my waistline expands. Should never have admitted turning 30. That was when the rot set in.
Oh, never mind, my love. When we get back home tonight, I'll put out your pipe and slippers, and you can have a nice doze in your chair by the fire before dinner.
Don't push your luck, Isabel.
Well, it serves you right. Anyone would think you were on your last legs and doddering toward the grave to hear you talk. There's nothing wrong with you that a good fight in a good cause couldn't put right. In the meantime, no desserts, cut down on the meat, and lots of nice, healthy salads. And no more snacks between meals either.
Why does everything that's good for you have to taste so damn bland? And I don't care if lettuce is good for me. I'm not eating it. Damn rabbit food. It's green, for crying out loud.
They continued on their way through the north side, doing their rounds and showing their faces. Hawk seemed in a somewhat better mood, but was still unusually quiet. Fisher decided to let him brood and not push it. He'd had these moods before and snapped out of them eventually. Together, they checked out 3 burglaries and lectured 1 shopkeeper on the need for bolts as well as locks on his doors and window shutters. None of the burglaries were anything special, just routine break-ins. Not much point in looking for clues. Sooner or later, they'd catch someone in the act, and he'd confess to a whole bunch of other crimes, and that would be that. After the burglaries, they got involved in a series of assaults, sorting out tavern brawls, muggings, and finally a domestic dispute. Hawk hated being dragged into domestic quarrels. You couldn't win. Whatever you did was bound to be wrong. They approached the location of the domestic dispute cautiously, but at least this time there was no flying crockery to dodge, or flying knives. The address was a pokey little apartment in the middle of a row of shabby tenements. Neighbors watched silently as the 2 guards entered the building. Hawk took the lead and kept a careful eye on the house's occupants as they made way before him. Guards were the common enemy of all Northsiders. They represented and enforced all the laws and authority that kept the poor in their place. As a result, guards were targets for anyone with a grudge or a mad on, and one of the nastier surprise attacks these days was the Haven Mud Pie, a mixture of lye and grease. Thrown at close range, the effect could be devastating. The lye burned through clothing as though it wasn't there, and if it hit bare skin, it could eat its way right down to the bone. The grease made the lye stick like glue. Even a small mud pie could put a guard in hospital for weeks if his partner didn't get him to a doctor fast enough. The doctors tended to be few and far between in the north side. The last man to aim a mud pie at Hawk had got both his arms broken, but there were any number of borderline crazies in the north side just waiting to be pushed over the edge by one frustration too many. So Hawk and Fisher stayed close together and kept a wary eye on shadowed corners and doors left just a little too far ajar. They made their way through the hall and up the narrow stairs without incident. Mothers with small children watched in stony silence, while from above came the sound of domestic unrest. Hawk and Fisher didn't let themselves get hurried. As long as the couple continued shouting, they weren't searching for blunt instruments or something with a sharp edge. It was when things went suddenly quiet that you worried. Hawk and Fisher reached the landing and strode down the hall, stepping over small children playing unconcernedly on the floor. They found the door with the right number. The sounds from within made it pretty hard to miss.
Go to hell! I told you, asshole! Go to hell!
Hawk shrugged, drew his axe, and kicked the door in. A man and a woman looked around in surprise as Hawk and Fisher stood in the doorway, taking in the scene. The woman was less than average height and more than a little undernourished, with a badly bruised face and a bloody nose. She was trying to stop the flowing blood with a grubby handkerchief and not being very successful. The man was easily twice her size, with muscles on his muscles, and he was brandishing a fist the size of a mallet. His face was dark with rage, and he glared sullenly at Hawk and Fisher as he took in their guards' cloaks.
What are you doing here? You've no business in this house. Get out! And if you damage my door, I'll see you pay for the repair.
If you damage that woman, you'll pay for it. Now stand back from her and put down that fist, and we'll all have a nice little chat.
This is family business.
The man lowered his fist, but stood his ground defiantly. Fisher moved forward to speak to the woman, and the man fell back a step in spite of himself. Fisher ignored him.
Does this kind of thing happen often?
Often enough.
Just say the word, and we'll drag him off to jail. You don't have to put up with this. Are you married to him?
More or less. He's not so bad most of the time, but he can't keep a job because of his temper. He just lost another one today.
So he comes home and takes it out on you.
That's enough! Don't you talk about me as if I'm not here! She's got nothing more to say to you, guard, if she knows what's good for her. And you two can get out now, or I'll throw you out.
You and what army?
I really think you should swear out a complaint against him. Next time, he might not just break your nose. A few nights in jail might calm him down a bit. And if nothing else, it should make him think twice about hitting you again.
You're right. I'll swear out a complaint.
You lousy bitch!
The man lurched forward, raising his huge hands menacingly. Fisher turned and smacked him solidly between the eyes with her fist. The man fell back a step and then sat down abruptly, blinking dazedly. Fisher looked at Hawk.
We'd better get him downstairs. You take one arm and I'll take the other.
Right. There's some railings outside we can chain him to until we can find a constable to take him back to headquarters for charging.
They got him to his feet easily enough and started for the door. Hawk looked back just in time to see the woman heading straight for him with a knife in her hand. He dropped the man and stepped quickly to one side, but the woman kept coming at him, her eyes wild and desperate. Fisher stuck out a leg and tripped her. The woman fell heavily and lost her grip on the knife. Hawk stepped forward and kicked it out of reach. Hawk looked at Fisher.
What the hell was that all about?
She loves him. She might not like the treatment, but she loves him just the same. And when she saw us hauling him off to jail, she forgot how angry she was and decided we were the villains of the piece for threatening her man. Now we have to take them both in. Can't let anyone get away with attacking a guard, or we'll never have any peace.
They found a constable eventually and let him take over, then set off on their beat again. The rain continued to show signs of letting up without ever actually doing anything about it. The day wore slowly on, fairly quiet by Northside standards. Hawk and Fisher broke up half a dozen fights, ran off a somewhat insecure Flasher, and helped talk a Leaper out of jumping from a rooftop. The city didn't really care if a Leaper killed himself or not, but there was always the chance he might land on someone important, so official policy in such cases was to clear the street below and then just let the would-be suicide get on with it. As in many other things, Hawk and Fisher ignored official policy and took the time to talk quietly and encouragingly to the man until he agreed to go down the normal way via the stairs. The odds were that by tomorrow he'd be back up on the roof again, but at least they'd bought him some time to think it over. Working in the north side, you learn to be content with little victories.
You know, sometimes when I'm up on a roof with a Leaper, I have an almost overwhelming urge to sneak up behind him and shout boo in his ear just to see what would happen.
You're weird, Hawk.
As Hawk nodded solemnly, the guard communication sorcerer's alarm played in the captain's heads.
Attention! All guards in the northern sector, report immediately to Damnation Row. A major riot is in progress. This order supersedes all other instructions. Do not discuss the situation with anyone else until you have reported to the prison governor. That is all.
Hawk scowled as he and Fisher turned around and headed back down the street, shoulders hunched against the renewed heavy rain. Damnation Row was Haven's oldest and largest prison, as well as the most secure. A great squat monstrosity of basalt stone. Surrounded on all sides by high walls and potent sorceries, it was infamous throughout the Low Kingdoms as the one prison no one had ever escaped from. Riots of any size were almost unknown, never mind a major riot. No wonder they'd been instructed not to talk about it. The prison's reputation was part of its protection. Besides, if word did get out, the streets would be thronged with people heading for the prison to try to help the inmates break out. Most people in Haven knew someone in Damnation Row. The prison itself stood jammed up against the city wall on the far boundary of the north side, and Hawk and Fisher could see its outline through the driving rain long before they got to its gatehouse. The exterior walls stood huge, dark, largely featureless, and seemed especially grim and forbidding through the downpour. Hawk hauled on the steel bell pull of the main gate and waited impatiently with Fisher for someone to answer. He'd never been inside Damnation Row before and was curious to see if it was as bad as everyone said. Conditions inside were supposed to be deliberately appalling. Haven bore nothing but contempt for anyone dumb enough or unsuccessful enough to get caught, and the idea was that a stay in Damnation Row would scare the offender so much he'd do anything rather than get sent back, including going straight. The prison's excellent security record also made it a useful dumping ground for dangerous lunatics, untrustworthy magic users, and political and religious embarrassments. The city firmly believed in taking revenge on its enemies. All of them. After ringing, knocking, and even kicking the door for good measure, all Hawk got out of it was a stubbed toe and an unsympathetic glance from Fisher. Finally, a sliding panel in the door jerked open, and a grim-faced prison guard studied their guards' uniforms for a long moment before slamming the panel shut and opening the Judas Gate in the main door to let them in. Hawk and Fisher identified themselves and weren't given time to dump their dripping wet cloaks before being hustled through the outer precincts of the prison to the governor's office. The room was comfortably furnished, but clearly a place of work rather than relaxation. The walls were bare, save for a number of past and present wanted posters and two framed testimonials. The governor's plain, almost austere desk groaned under mountains of paperwork, split more or less equally into two piles marked pending and urgent. The governor, Philippe Dexter, stood up from behind his desk to shake hands briefly with Hawk and Fisher and gestured for them to take a seat. He returned to his own chair quickly, as though only sheer willpower kept him on his feet that long. He was an average-looking man in his late 40s, dressed fashionably but conservatively, and had a bland politician's face. At the moment, he looked tired and drawn, and his hand had trembled slightly with fatigue when Hawk shook it. The two guards took off their cloaks and draped them over the coat rack before sitting down. The governor watched the cloaks dripping heavily on his carpet and closed his eyes for a moment, as though that was definitely the last straw.
How long has this riot been going on?
Almost 4 hours now.
The governor scowled unhappily.
We thought we could contain it at first, but we just didn't have the manpower. This prison has always suffered from overcrowding, with two or even three inmates locked up in a cell originally meant for one. mainly because Haven is almost doubled in size since this prison was built. But we coped because we had to. There was nowhere else to put the prisoners. All the other jails in Haven are just holding pens and debtors' prisons, and they face the same problems as we do. But now, thanks to the Council's ill-advised purge of the streets, we've had prisoners arriving here in the hundreds over the last week or so, and my staff just couldn't cope with the resulting crush. We had 4, sometimes 5, to a cell in some places, and not even enough warning to allow for extra food and blankets. Something had to give. The prisoners decided this morning that they couldn't be treated any worse than they already were, and attacked the prison staff during breakfast and slopping out. The violence soon spread, and we didn't have enough manpower to put it down. Essentially, we lost half the prison. The prisoners set up barricades and booby traps in all of the approaches to 2 of the main wings. They've been throwing everything they can get their hands on at us and making us keep our distance. They started several fires, but so far the prison's security spells have been able to stamp them out before they could get out of control. So far, no one's actually escaped. Our perimeter's still secure. We've tried to negotiate with the inmates, but none of them have shown any interest in talking. Pretty soon the Council's going to order me to take the occupied wings back by force, before the Kings get to hear about the riot and start getting worried. But that, believe it or not, is not the main problem. Adjoining the 2 occupied wings is Hell Wing, where we keep our supernatural prisoners. Creatures of power and magic, locked away here while awaiting trial, Hell Wing is in its own pocket dimension, surrounded by powerful wards, so it should still be secure. But we have reports of several magic users among the rioters. If they find a way into Hell Wing and set those creatures loose, a whole army of guards wouldn't be enough to control them.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and then back at the governor.
If it's as serious as all that, why are you wasting time talking to us? You need somebody with real power, like the God Squad or the SWAT team.
Agreed. We alerted the God Squad, but at present they are busy coping with an emergency on the Street of Gods. I sent for the Special Wizardry and Tactics team. They're on their way. When they get here, I want you two to work with them. You've both worked with the God Squad in the past, you have experience coping with supernatural creatures, and you have a reputation for salvaging impossible situations. And right now, I'm so desperate, I'll grab at any straw.
Before the governor could even ask who it was, a woman and 3 men filed into the office. The woman fixed the governor with a harsh gaze.
You sent for the SWAT team. We're here. Don't worry, we've been briefed.
She looked at Hawk and Fisher.
What are they doing here?
They'll be working with you on this. The God Squad's been delayed. These 2 officers are Captains Hawk and Fisher.
I know who they are.
The woman nodded briskly to Hawk and Fisher.
I'm Jessica Winter, team leader and tactician. My associates are Stuart Barber, weapon master, John McCready, negotiator, and Storm, sorcerer. That takes care of introductions. Anything more can wait till later, when a tight schedule and time's running out. Let's go. Sit tight, Governor. You'll have your prison back in a few hours. Oh, and if any more guards arrive, keep them out of our way.
She smiled briefly and hustled her people out of the office before the governor could work up a reply. Hawk and Fisher nodded to him and hurried out after the SWAT team. Jessica Winter led the way down the corridor with casual confidence, and Hawk took the opportunity to surreptitiously study his new partners. He knew them all by reputation, but had never worked with any of them before. Winter was a short, stocky woman with a determined, friendly manner that reminded Hawk irresistibly of an amiable bulldog. She was in her early 30s and looked it. She'd been through 2 husbands that Hawk knew of, and was currently pursuing her 3rd. She moved and spoke with a brisk, no-nonsense efficiency, and by all accounts could be charming or overwhelming as the mood took her. She was dressed in a simple shirt and trousers, topped with a chainmail vest that had been polished within an inch of its life, and wore a sword on her hip in a plain, regulation-issue scabbard. She'd been with the SWAT team for 7 years, 2 of them as leader and tactician. She had a good, if somewhat spotty, record, and preferred to dismiss her failures as learning experiences. Given that her team wasn't usually called in until things had gotten totally out of hand, Winter had built up a good reputation for finding solutions to problems at the last possible moment. She also had a reputation for convoluted and devious strategies, which Hawk felt might come in handy just at the moment. He had a strong feeling there was a lot more to this situation than met the eye. He glanced across at Stuart Barber, the weapons master, and felt a little reassured. Even walking down an empty corridor in the midst of friends and allies, Barber exuded an air of danger and menace. He was a tall, powerfully built man in his mid-20s, with arms so tightly muscled the veins bulged fiercely even when his arms were apparently relaxed. He had a broad, brutal-looking sword on his hip, in a battered leather scabbard, and wore a long chainmail vest that had been repaired many times, not always neatly. He had a long, angular head with pale, pinched features accentuated by dark hair, cropped short at a military cut. He wore a constant, slight scowl that made him look more thoughtful than bad-tempered. John MacCready, the negotiator, looked like everyone's favorite uncle. It was his job to talk people out of things before Winter let Barber loose on them. MacCready was average height and well-padded in a friendly, non-threatening way. He smiled a lot and had the charming gift of convincing people he was giving them his entire attention while they were talking. He was in his mid-40s, going bald and trying to hide it with a somewhat desperate hairstyle. He had an easy, companionable way about him that made him hard to distrust, but Hawk decided to try anyway. He didn't put much faith in people who smiled too much. It wasn't natural. The sorcerer called Storm was a large, awkward-looking man. He was easily 6 feet 6 inches, and his broad frame made him look even taller. His robe of sorcerer's black looked as if it hadn't been cleaned in months, and the state of his long black hair and beard suggested they'd never even been threatened with a comb. He scowled fiercely at nothing and everything, and just grunted whenever Winter addressed him. His hands curled and uncurled into fists at his sides, and he strode along with his beard jutting out before him, as though just waiting for some fool to pick a quarrel with him. All in all, he looked rather like some mystical hermit who'd spent years in a cave, meditating on the nature of man and the universe, and came up with some very unsatisfying answers. The sorcerer looked around suddenly and caught Hawk's eye.
What are you staring at?
I was just wondering about your name.
My name? What about me?
Well, Storm's not exactly a usual name for a sorcerer. A weather wizard, maybe, but...
It suits me. Want to make something of it?
Hawk thought about it for a moment and then shook his head.
Not right now. I was just curious.
Storm looked away. Jessica Winter fell back a few steps to walk alongside Hawk. She smiled at him briefly.
Don't mind Storm. He's a gloomy bugger, but he knows his job.
Just what kind of setup are we walking into?
Fisher moved up on Hawk's other side.
As I understand it, you've had a full briefing. We just got the edited highlights.
Not surprisingly, the situation isn't as simple and straightforward as it appears. The riot broke out far too suddenly and too efficiently for it to have been entirely spontaneous. Somebody had to be behind it, pulling the strings and pointing people in the right direction. But the governor's attempts to negotiate got nowhere because the rioters couldn't agree on a leader to represent them. That suggests whoever is behind the riot is keeping his head down. Which in turn suggests that person had his own reasons for starting it.
Like breaking someone out under the cover of the chaos?
Short and to the point. But so far, no one's got out over the walls or through the gates. The prison guards have seen to that. The governor's insistence on regular panic drills seems to have paid off. The real problem lies with Hellwing, which is where we come in. If someone's managed to get in there and bust any of those creatures loose, we could be in real trouble. We could break out any number of people in the chaos that would cause. And if that someone's let them all loose, we might as well evacuate the city.
Not bad.
Worse.
Might this be a good time to suggest a strategic retreat so we can wait for the God Squad to back us up?
The word retreat isn't in our vocabulary.
It's in mine.
Just how well confined are these supernatural prisoners?
Very. Hellwing is a separate pocket dimension linked to Damnation Row by a single doorway, protected by armed guards and a number of powerful magical wards. Each inmate is confined separately behind bars of cold iron, backed up by an individually tailored gears, a magical compulsion that prevents them from escaping. There's never been an escape from Hellwing. The system's supposed to be foolproof.
Unless it's been sabotaged from inside.
Exactly.
All of this suggests the riot was planned well in advance. The prison didn't become dangerously overcrowded until just recently.
It was a fairly predictable situation. Once it was known that kings were coming here, especially if our mysterious planners knew of that in advance.
MacCready went to full alert.
And we'll have to take it carefully from here on in. We're getting close to the occupied wings. We have to pass right by them to get to Hell Wing. The governor's going to try and distract them with new attempts at negotiating, but there's no telling how long that will last. It's bedlam in there.
Oh, what the hell are they doing?
They'll have gotten to the sex offenders by now. There's a social status among criminals, even in Damnation Row. Sex offenders and child molesters sit right at the bottom of the list. The other prisoners loathe and despise them. They call them beasts, and they assault them every chance they get. Mostly, they're held in solitary confinement for their own protection. And right now, the prisoners are holding mock trials and killing the rapists and child abusers one by one. Of course, when they finish with that, there are various political and religious factions all eager to settle old grudges. When the dust settles from that, the prisoners have demolished as much of the prison building as they can. They'll turn on the 17 prison staff they were able to get their hands on and try to use them as a lever for an escape. If that doesn't work, they'll kill them too.
We can't let that happen. We've got to put a stop to this.
We will, once we've made sure Hellwing is secure. I know, Fisher. You want to rush in there and rescue them, but we can't. Part of this job, perhaps the hardest part, is learning to turn your back on one evil so you can concentrate on a greater one.
An ominous quiet fell over the prison.
Should have put a Geas on the lot of them. Then there wouldn't have been all this trouble in the first place.
It's been suggested many times, but it would cost like hell, and the council won't go for it. Cells and bars come a lot cheaper than magic.
Hold it!
Everyone stopped dead where they were. The sorcerer stared silently at the empty corridor ahead of them, his scowl gradually deepening.
We're almost there. The next bend leads into Sorcerer's Row, where the magic users are confined. They're held in separate cells backed up by an individual Geas. After that, there's nothing between us and Hellwing.
Why have we stopped? What's wrong, Storm?
I don't know. My inner sight's not much use here. Too many security spells. But I ought to be picking up some trace of the magic users on Sorcerer's Row. And I'm not getting anything. Just traces of stray magic scattered all over the place, as though something very powerful happened here not long ago. I don't like the feel of it, Jessica.
Winter glanced back at the team.
Draw your weapons!
Hawk hefted his axe thoughtfully and then frowned as he realized MacReady was unarmed.
Where's your sword?
I don't need one. I lead a charmed life.
Hawk decided he wasn't going to ask, if only because MacReady was obviously waiting for him to do so. He nodded calmly to the negotiator and moved forward to join Winter and Storm.
I don't like standing around here, Winter. It makes us too good a target. If there's a problem with Sorcerer's Row, let's check it out.
Winter looked at him coolly.
I lead the team, Captain Hawk, and that means I make the decisions. We're going to take this slow and easy, one step at a time. I don't believe in rushing into things.
You're in charge, Winter. What's the plan?
It's possible the rioters could have broken the magic users out of their cells, but not very likely. The gear should still hold them. Captain Hawk, you and your partner check out the situation. Barber, back them up. Everyone else stays put. And Hawk, no heroics, please. Just take a quick look around and then come back and tell me what you saw. Got it?
Got it.
He and Fisher moved slowly forward over the stone floor. Barber brought up the rear. Hawk would rather not have had him there on the grounds that he didn't want to be worrying about what Barber was doing when he should be concentrating on getting the job done, but he couldn't say no. He didn't want to upset Winter this early in their professional relationship, or Barber for that matter. He looked like he knew how to use that sword. Hawk concentrated on the darkening corridor ahead. Some of the lamps had gone out. His gaze darted from shadow to shadow as he approached the bend in the corridor. The continuing silence seemed to grow thicker, more menacing, and Hawk had a growing conviction that someone or something was waiting for him just out of sight around the corner. Hawk eased to a halt, his shoulder pressed against the wall just before the bend, then glanced back at Fisher and Barber. He gestured for them to stay put and took a firm grip on his axe. He jumped forward to stare down the side corridor into Sorcerer's Row. It stretched away before him, all gloom and shadow, lit only by a half a dozen wall lamps at irregular intervals. The place looked deserted. All the cell doors had been torn out of their frames and lay scattered across the floor. The open cells stood dark and silent, reminding Hawk unpleasantly of gaps left after a pulled tooth. He stayed in place and gestured for Fisher and Barber to join him. They did so quickly.
Whew. We got here too late, Hawk. Whatever happened here is over.
We don't know that yet. We've still got to check the cells. Fisher, watch my back. Barber, stay put and watch the corridor, both ends. And let's all be very careful. I don't like the feel of this.
Blood has been spilled here. A lot of it. Some of it's still pretty fresh.
I don't see any blood.
I could smell it.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other briefly and then moved cautiously toward the first cell. Fisher took one of the lamps from its niche in the wall and held it up to give Hawk more light. He glanced down at the solid steel door lying warped and twisted on the floor before him. At first, he thought it must have been buckled by some sort of intense heat, but there was no trace of any melting or scorching in the metal. The door was a good 2 inches thick. Hawk didn't want to think about the kind of strength that could warp that thickness of steel. There were a few small splashes of blood in the cell doorway, dry and almost black. Hawk eased forward a step at a time, ready for any attack.
Damn.
The light from Fisher's lamp filled the cell. The cell's occupant hung nailed to the far wall with a dozen daggers and left to bleed to death. Given the amount of blood soaking the floor below him, death arrived on a slow ferry. Hawk moved quickly from cell to cell, with Fisher close behind him. Every cell held a dead man, each killed in a different way. None of them died easily. They all wore Sorcerer's Black, but their magic hadn't protected them. Hawk sent Barbara back to fetch the rest of the team while he and Fisher dutifully searched the bodies for any sign of life. It didn't take long. Winter walked slowly down Sorcerer's Row, frowning, with MacReady at her side. Storm darted from cell to cell. Barber sheathed his sword and leaned against the corridor wall with his arms folded. Barber looked completely relaxed, but Hawk noted the man kept a careful watch on both ends of the corridor. Storm finally finished his inspection and stalked back to report to Winter. Hawk and Fisher joined them.
What happened here? I thought they were supposed to be magic users. Why didn't they defend themselves?
The Geas wouldn't let them. They were helpless in their cells when the killers came.
Why kill them at all? Why should the rioters hate magic users enough to do something like this to them?
There's no hate in this. This was cold and calculated. Every bloody bit of it. It's a mass sacrifice, a ritual designed to increase magical power. If one sorcerer sacrifices another, he can add the dead man's magic to his own. And if a sorcerer were to sacrifice all these magic users, one after another, he'd have more than enough magic to smash through into Hellwing and make a new doorway.
Wait a minute. All the sorcerers in this prison were held here, on Sorcerer's Row, and none of them are missing. There's a dead body in every cell.
Someone must have smuggled a sorcerer in. Disguised as a prisoner, probably bribed a guard to look the other way. This riot was carefully planned, people, right down to the last detail.
So someone could have already entered Hellwing and let the creatures out?
I don't know. Maybe. I can tell there's a new dimensional doorway close at hand, now that I know what I'm looking for. But I can't tell if anyone's been through it recently.
Fisher looked at Winter.
All right, leader. What are we going to do?
Go into Hellwing and see what's happened. Our orders were to do whatever is necessary to prevent the inmates of Hellwing from breaking out. Nothing has happened to change that.
Except now, we face a rogue sorcerer and an unknown number of rioters, as well as whatever's locked up in there. I didn't like the odds when we started, and I like them even less now. I can't do suicide missions.
Right.
Winter looked at them both steadily.
As long as you're a part of the SWAT team, you'll do whatever I require you to do. If that isn't acceptable, you can leave any time.
We'll stay. For now.
That isn't good enough, Captain.
It's all you're going to get.
Fisher pushed between Hawk and Winter and glared at them both impartially.
If you two have quite finished flexing your muscles at each other, may I remind you we still have a job to do? You can butt heads later, on your own time.
Winter nodded stiffly.
Your partner is right, Captain Hawk. We can continue this later. I take it I can rely on your cooperation for the remainder of this mission?
Sure. I can be professional when I have to be.
Good. Situation isn't necessarily as bad as it sounds. I think we have to assume some of the rioters entered Hellwing, presumably to release the inmates in the hope that they'd add to the general chaos. But if the fools managed to break any of the gears and some of those creatures are loose, I think we can also safely assume that those rioters are now dead. Which means we're free to concentrate on recapturing those creatures that have broken loose.
Just how powerful are these creatures?
Very. Personally, I think we should just seal off an entire wing and forget how to find it.
Those are not our orders. They have the right to a fair trial.
That's not why our lords and masters want these things kept alive. Creatures of power like these could prove very useful as weapons. Just in case the peace treaty doesn't work out after all.
That's none of our business, Storm.
Wait a minute. Are you saying we're supposed to take these things alive?
If at all possible, yes. Do you have a problem with that?
This case gets better by the minute. Look, before we go any further, I want a full briefing on these creatures of power. What exactly are we going to be facing in Hellwing?
To start with, there's the Pale Men. They're not real, but that just makes them more dangerous. They can take on the aspect of people you used to be, but no longer are. The longer they hold the contact, the more real they become, while you fade into a ghost, a fancy, a might have been. Sorcerers create pale men from old love letters, blood spilled in anger, an engagement ring from a marriage that failed, or a baby's shoes bought for a child never born. Any unfinished emotion that can still be tapped. Be wary of them. They're very good at finding chinks in your emotional armor you never knew you had.
How many of them are there?
We don't know. It tends to vary. We don't know why. Then there's Johnny Nobody. We think he used to be human, perhaps a sorcerer who lost a duel. Now he's just a human shape consisting of guts and muscle and blood held together by surface tension. He has no skin, no bones, but he still stands upright. He screams a lot, but he never speaks. When we caught him, he was killing people for their skin and bones. Apparently he can use them to replace what he lost for a time, but his body keeps rejecting them, so he has to keep searching for more.
Surprised he hasn't killed himself.
He's tried several times. His curse won't let him die. Now, if I may continue? Messerschmann's portrait is a magical booby trap left behind by the sorcerer Boyd when he had to leave Haven in a hurry earlier this year, pursued by half the sorcerers and mages court. We still don't know what he did to upset them, but it must have been pretty extreme. They're a hard-boiled bunch in mages court. Anyway, the portrait came here for safekeeping. It's been in Hellwing ever since. The creature in the portrait may have been human once, but it sure as hell isn't now. According to the experts who examined the portrait, the creature is actually alive, trapped in the portrait by some powerful magic they don't fully understand. A thing wants out. Apparently, if it locks eyes with you long enough, it can walk out into the world and you would be trapped in the portrait in its place. So don't get careless around it.
You should be safe enough, Hawk. It'd have a hard time locking eyes with you.
Hawk winked his single eye, a gesture that somehow lacked effectiveness.
Crawling, Jenny, is something of an enigma. It's a living mixture of moss, fungi, and cobwebs with staring eyes and snapping mouths. It was only 5 or 6 feet in diameter when it was first removed from the Street of Gods because it was menacing the tourists. Now it fills most of its cell. If some fools let Crawling Jenny loose and it's been feeding all this time, there's no telling how big it might be by now. The Brimstone Boys are human constructs, neither living nor dead. They smell of dust and sulfur, and their eyes bleed. Their presence distorts reality, and they bring entropy wherever they go. There are only 2 of them, thank all the gods, but watch yourselves. They're dangerous. We lost 5 constables and 2 sorcerers taking them. I don't want to add to that number. And finally, we come to who knows. We don't know what that is. It's big, very nasty, and completely invisible. And judging by the state of its victims' bodies, it's got a hell of a lot of teeth. They caught it with nets, pushed it into its cell on the end of several long poles, and nobody's gone near it since. It hasn't been fed in over a month, but it's still alive, as far as anyone can tell.
I just had a great idea. Let's turn around, go back, and swear we couldn't find Hellwing.
I'll go along with that.
Winter's mouth twitched.
It's tempting, I'll admit. But no. We're SWAT and we can handle anything. It says so in our contract. Listen up, people. This is how we're going to do it. Storm, you open up the gateway and then stand back. Barbara, Hawk, and Fisher, you go through first. If you see something and it moves, hit it. Hard. Storm will be right behind you to provide whatever magical support you need. I'll bring up the rear. Mac, you stay back here and guard the entrance. I don't want anyone sneaking up on us from behind.
Oh, you never let me in on the exciting stuff.
Yes, and aren't you grateful?
Very.
Winter smiled and turned back to the others.
Take your places, people. Storm, open the gateway.
The sorcerer walked a few steps down the corridor.
Raka, Malachan, Halonpo.
Barber stepped forward to take the point, and Hawk and Fisher moved in on either side of him. Barber glanced at them briefly and frowned.
Don't you people believe in armor? This isn't some bar brawl we're walking into.
I tried it where I came from. It just slows you down. The guard experiments with it from time to time, but it's never caught on. With the kind of work we do, it's more important for us to be able to move freely and react quickly. You can't chase a pickpocket down a crowded street wearing chainmail. Our cloaks have steel mesh built into them, but that's it.
You don't even wear that most of the time, unless I nag you.
Don't like cloaks. They get in the way while I'm fighting.
I've always believed in armor.
Barber swung his sword loosely before him. He seemed perfectly relaxed, but his gaze never left Storm.
Doesn't matter how good you are with the blade, there's always someone better, or luckier. That's when a good set of chainmail comes into its own.
Gemtana! Gemtane! Gemma!
The floor lurched and dropped away beneath their feet for a heart-stopping moment before becoming firm again. The huge metal door hung unsupported on the air right in front of them, floating 2 or 3 inches off the ground. An 8-foot-tall slab of roughly beaten steel, it gleamed dully in the lamplight. Then, as they watched, it swung slowly open to reveal a featureless, impenetrable darkness. A cold breeze blew steadily from the doorway. Hawk thought he heard something that might have been screaming or laughter, but it was gone too quickly for him to identify.
Move it! I don't know how long I can keep the gateway open! There's so much strange magic around, it's distorting my spells!
You heard the man! Go, go, go!
Barber stepped through the doorway, and the darkness swallowed him up. Hawk and Fisher followed him in, blades at the ready. The darkness quickly gave way to a vague, sourceless, silver glow. Barber, Hawk, and Fisher moved immediately to take up a defensive pattern, looking quickly about them for possible threats. They were standing in a narrow corridor that seemed to stretch away forever. The walls and the low ceiling were both covered with a thick mass of dirty gray cobwebs. The floor was a pale, pockmarked stone, splashed here and there with dark spots of dried blood. There was a brief disturbance in the air behind them as first Storm and then Winter appeared out of nowhere to join them.
All clear here, Jessica. No sign of anyone or anything.
Oh, this is Hellwing. I don't think much of it. Ooh, did they ever clean up in here?
I'm not sure where or what this is. Doesn't feel like Hellwing. The air is charged with magic. But there's no trace of the standard security spells that ought to be here. Everything feels wrong.
Are you saying you brought us to the wrong place?
Of course not. This is where Hellwing used to be. This is what has replaced Hellwing. I think we have to assume the creatures have broken loose. All of them.
Barber hefted his sword.
Oh, hell. I don't like this, Jessica. You must have known somebody would be coming. Odds are this place is one big trap, set and primed just for us.
Could be. But let's not panic just yet, all right? Nothing's actually threatened us so far. Storm, where does this corridor lead?
Storm shook his head angrily.
I can't tell. My sight's all but useless here. But there's something up ahead. I can feel it. I think it's watching us.
Then let's go find it. Barber, you have the point. Let's take this one step at a time, people. And remember, not just looking for the creatures. The rioters who opened the gateway have got to be here somewhere. And people, when we find them, I don't want any heroics. If any of the rioters wants to surrender, that's fine. But no one's to take any chances with them. All right? Move out. Let's get the job done.
They moved off down the corridor. The darkness retreated before them so that they moved always in the same sourceless silver glow. The thick matted cobwebs furred the walls and ceiling, hanging down here and there in grimy streamers, swaying gently on the air, stirred by an unfelt breeze. Hawk held his axe before him, his hands clutching the haft so tightly that his knuckles showed white. His instincts screamed at him to get out while he still could. But he couldn't just turn tail and run, not in front of Winter. Besides, she was right. Even if this place was a trap, they still had a job to do. He glared at the darkness ahead of them, then glanced back over his shoulder. The darkness hovered there, too. Following the pool of light, the team moved in. More and more, it seemed to Hawk, they were moving through the body of some immense unnatural beast, as though they'd been swallowed alive, soon to be digested. Barber stopped suddenly, and they all piled up behind him, somehow just managing to avoid toppling each other. Barber silently indicated the right-hand wall, and they crowded around to examine it. They saw a ragged break in the thick matting of dirty gray cobwebs, revealing a plain wooden door, standing slightly ajar. The wood was scarred and gouged as though by claws and splashed with dried blood. The heavy iron lock had been smashed, half hanging away from the door. Winter gestured for them all to move back, and they did so.
It seems my first guess was wrong. This is Hellwing after all. Nearly hidden in the skies by this transformation. The lock quite clearly bears the prison's official mark. Presumably, the door leads to what was originally one of the cells.
Any idea what's in there?
Something magical. But that's all I can tell. Might be alive, might not. Again, there's so much strange magic floating around, my sight can't see through it.
Then why not just open the door and take a look? I've had it up to here with sneaking around, and I'm just in the mood to hit something. All we have to do is kick the door in and then fill the gap so that whatever's in there can't escape.
Sounds good to me. Who gets to kick the door in?
Barber straightened up.
No, I do. I'm still the point man.
He looked at Winter, and she nodded. Barber moved silently back to the door, and the others formed up behind him, weapons at the ready. Barber took a firm grip on his sword, lifted his left boot, and kicked. As the door swung open, it revealed the small, gloomy cell. Everybody tensed, ready for any sudden sound or movement, but nothing happened. The cell wasn't much bigger than a privy, and it smelled much the same. The only illumination was the silver glow falling in from the corridor outside, but it was more than enough to show that the cell was empty. No bed or other furnishings, only some filthy straw on the floor. Some of the tension went out of Hawk, and he lowered his axe.
Looks like you got it wrong this time, Storm. No one's home. Whoever, or whatever, used to be locked up in here is long gone now.
With a trusting nature like yours, Captain, I'm astonished you've lasted as long as you have. The cell's occupant is quite likely still here, held by its keys, even though the lock has been broken. You just can't see it, that's all.
Anyone else would have blushed. As it was, Hawk spent a moment looking down at his boots before nodding briefly to the sorcerer and then staring into the cell with renewed interest.
Right. I'd forgotten about who knows. The invisible creature. You sure the Geas is still controlling it?
Of course. If it wasn't, the creature would have attacked us by now.
Not necessarily. It might just be waiting for us to lower our guard, which presents us with something of a problem. If it isn't still held by its gears, we can't afford to just turn our backs and walk away. It might come after us. The reports I saw described it as immensely strong and entirely malevolent.
Which means someone's gonna have to go in that cell and check the thing's actually there.
Good idea. Hawk, just go in and check it out, would you?
Hawk looked at her.
You go in and check it out. Do I look crazy?
Usually or right now?
I'll do it.
No, you won't. No one's going into that cell. I can't afford to lose any of you. Barber, hand me an incendiary.
Barber smiled briefly and reached into a leather pouch at his belt. He brought out a small, smooth stone that glowed a dull, sullen red in the gloom, like a coal left too long in the fire, and handed it carefully to Winter. She hefted it briefly, and then tossed it casually from hand to hand while staring into the apparently empty cell. Barber winced. Winter turned to Hawk and Fisher and gestured with the glowing stone.
I don't suppose you've seen one of these before. Something new the guard sorcerers came up with. We're field testing them. Each incendiary is a moment taken out of time from an exploding volcano. An instant of appalling heat and violence fixed in time like an insect trapped in amber. All I have to do is say the right word, throw the damn thing as far as I can, and a few seconds later, the spell collapses, releasing all that heat and violence. Which is pretty unfortunate for anything that happens to be in vicinity at the time. If who knows is in that cell, it's about to get a very nasty surprise. Stand ready, people. As soon as I throw this thing, I want that door slammed shut fast and everyone out of the way of the blast.
What kind of range does it cover?
That's one of the things we're testing.
How did I know you were going to say that?
Winter lifted the stone to her mouth. She tossed the incendiary into the cell and stepped quickly aside. Hawk and Barber slammed the cell door shut and put their backs to the wall on either side of it. The door was hurled into the corridor by a blast of superheated air. Hawk put up an arm to protect his face from the sudden intense heat, and a glaring crimson light filled the corridor. The wooden doorframe burst into flames, and the cobwebs on the corridor wall opposite scorched and blackened in an instant. In the heart of the leaping flames that filled the cell, something dark and shapeless thrashed and was finally still. The temperature in the corridor grew intolerably hot, and Hawk backed away, mopping at the sweat that ran down his face. The others moved with him, and he was about to suggest that they all run like hell for the gateway when the flames suddenly died away. The crimson glare disappeared, and the temperature dropped as quickly as it had risen. A vile stench rode on the smoky air. Hawk moved forward and peered cautiously into the cell. The walls were blackened with soot, and smoke hung heavily on the still air, but there was no sign of the cell's occupant, dead or alive.
Think we got it?
Isabel, don't do that. Who knows? But we'd better hope so. If the incendiary didn't kill it, I'd hate to think of the mood it must be in.
Dead. I felt it die.
Handy things, those incendiaries.
Hawk and Fisher turned back to face the others.
How long do you think it'll be before they're released to the rest of the guard?
Hopefully never in your case, given your reputation for death and destruction.
You don't want to believe everything you hear.
Just the bad bits.
Let's move it, people. Got a lot more ground to cover yet. Barbara, take the point again. Everyone else as before, let's go.